I thought we knew everything. Oh, no, we didn't know this. So once you know that new surprising stuff, then there'll be newer mystery landscapes. Just stuff you don't know.
Which is not a problem. Which is not a problem if you now know how you found
it. It's not a problem. I don't know why you say those words. Nelson, get back to what you're doing. Don't get distracted with this. I don't know what he's talking about.
Okay, well, either way, what was previously a mystery is now a landscape.
Yeah, and what is it that you found out?
It's just the
X-axis, making the new X-axis?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, that we've known, you and I have known that for months. What is it about, why is Ian saying that now? We're highlighting that.
We said it then.
Yeah, why is Ian making a deal out of the finding new X-axis?
I don't know.
Yeah. No, don't get confused.
All right, thanks.
Because it exposes the previously not known future price of the euro.
Yep.
It includes all the factors that were up until this moment unknown that now are known. That's how you're able to accurately calculate the A2 value of the euro, Nelson.
Okay, so once you have that shift, then you're saying to look at your Maybank rate?
Yes.
Okay, so that shift is going to be, now let me just think about that. Is that shift always going to be, oh no, it's not, it's the intersection point. So it's not the shift of the amplitude, it's the intersection point relative to the amplitude. Okay. So then you take your Maybank rate now. Right now, what I'm
doing... Wait, one second. Bob, will you turn down your fan and lawnmower?
Sorry, I didn't have to go back on mute. Sorry.
Okay. Once you've got that shift, you then need to do your Maybank rate. So you take the answers from the two separate processes and that you put A over B, correct? And this amount, if negative, is divided by the Maybank rate for the given outlook duration. So, in order to find the Maybank rate for the given outlook duration, if this was a 13-day trade, or I want to look out 13 days, I would take the yearly Maybank rate. So, for example, the rate per annum of a 12-month fixed deposit is 3.15. Okay?
That's not what we said at all. That's not what we said. We said find out what the rate is for that span.
I know, but you've got to start from somewhere.
Well,
you've got to understand
you could start from Israel, but that doesn't mean it's going to get you closer to it.
Right. Okay, right now they don't publish anything that is below a month.
So you send them an email and you say, is there a calculation for a 13-day certificate deposit? And they go, percent. And you go, thank you.
Okay, so I'll email them and get that. But either way, it's divisible by the yearly percent return.
Well, it's interesting because the one-month CD is going to pay less than the six-month CD, which may not give you an APR that's a 12-month CD. Do you
yes,
see that?
Exactly.
And
yes.
Sometimes the two-month CD will pay more than a six-month CD, depending on what T-bonds, T-bills, and T-shit is.
Okay, so
it does have play.
Okay, so you've got to be exact with this. You've got to get the rate for me.
Well, we say absolutely. It'll serve you. Because,
okay.
Well, you want A2 to be exact.
Yeah.
So, yeah, absolutely.
So the biggest hurdle right now that I have to figure out is the ratio of the triangle.
And that'll change your perspective. That's right.
I still know, other than... I don't know how to find, like, even if I take this and divide it by 20, like these, but we don't want this to be huge. I mean, I would prefer if the blocks were within 50 blocks or even within, 25 blocks. But these numbers are just so large. I mean, well, so small. Well, there's so many decimals that you can't really find a number that goes into all of them at the same time. Like, if you can't find a number that goes into all of them at the same time evenly, how do you manage to adjust your ratio?
We'd say blow it up, plot it, and then reduce it all by the same amount. You could do that. If it could accurately pinpoint and then you remove those lines, you'd have your exact ratio, would you not?
Yes. If you blew it all up and then
plot it and then reduced it equally, just like we said, rolling up and down on your moose or mice or mice, then you would have an exact ratio, would you not?
Yes, you would.
Because if you reduce it in size, you've reduced them all, have you not?
Yes, you have.
That would justify itself, would it not?
Yeah. So that's what
simplifies
I've got to
it, do. Would it not?
Yeah, you basically got to uniformly make it smaller.
Well, yeah. Yeah, ratio, perspective, that's right.
Okay.
And as long as you're doing it to all three simultaneously, we say, hooray, you win.
But let's say, like, even let's say you do that and you drag it so C is equal to 20. The other two could still be equal to, like, 15.4 and, like... 14.
Yes, but if you plotted it out at the big level and then reduced it to your marks, it will accurately gauge that 0.4. And see, if 0.4 was your only problem, you could divide that block in half, and then you could divide that half into 5, and you could find out 0.4 pretty accurately.
Pretty accurately.
But that's not the question. The question is when you get it to 4.378968, blah, 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 it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
And see, and you're not dropping those values that you're working with, because you're going to set an angle. That's going to affect an angle, which affects everything. So that's the only reason. But that may be the simplest, easiest way out. Plot it big, reduce it down, and you're there.
Yeah, I may be able to do that with just like a drawing software.
Of course. Of course.
There's common factors calculators. And I wonder, I don't necessarily need the greatest common factor. Let's just find a common factor. But either way, this isn't going to be a consistent way to do it because you're going to run into three numbers that don't have a common factor when there's...
That's fine, that's fine. But this new thing you've stumbled into...
Is better.
...of making it big and reducing it all equally would get you exact. The same way if you're doing, like, pagination or registration on a label and it's for a bottle of fingernail polish. Well, if you make that thing the size of a room... and paint it, and then reduce it down, your pixelation's going to be pretty, your registration's going to be tight as Dick's headband, is it not?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
You see, all you're doing is you're adjusting your perspective, and that's what we're talking about here. So, precisely.
Okay, that's what I'll do. Now, as long as...
That'll help you. That'll help you, because all you got to do this is once and get it together, and then all of a sudden you're coasting.
Now, couldn't I technically figure out the relationships between the three numbers? Like, if I took 100%, I could figure out one number would be like 20% of that 100%, the other number would be 45% of that 100%, the other number would be like 30, whatever, and then you'd leave that the same. As long as your ratios relative to each other are the same, you're good.
Then you have no negative impact on the perspective.
Okay.
That's right.
Okay.
There you
so I'll
go.
Good. That's the best way to do that.
Good. That's a simple thing. Because that's getting into the very fine details. But the very fine details is the difference between success and horseshoes and hand grenades.
Yeah.
You see, you don't want to be right every single time. You just want to be right every single time you actually got money on it. you're right. Every single time you put money on it, you don't have to trade. You don't have to do it often, do you?
No, you don't.
Good.
Okay, another
now,
question.
We'll get into that. We'll get into that. We'll help you with that, Nelson, because you will shoot yourself in the ass. We're saying, once you get this, don't get drunk on your own liquor.
No,
you be
I won't.
Easy with this information, because it will not serve you. We'll show you how to spread it out a little bit so it fits into the Android meme.
Okay. another question outside.
Thinking of a sweet romance beginning in a queue. Roxy, what was wrong with the word Galveston, Texas? Why'd you put a question mark on that?
No, they said Galveston.
Dallastown?
Galveston.
Yeah.
Galveston.
Oh, they said it wrong.
No.
Well, what did they say?
They said right.
They said Galveston. So why did you ask about it?
Just like, Galveston?
I mean, I'm supposed to do Lucanbac or something?
No.
What is your objection to Galveston?
Nothing. I was just asking. Like,
yeah, you went Galveston.
I have to clean my gun in Galveston. I found that funny.
Is that what he said?
Yeah. Wow.
Okay, Gene, you're going to have to carry the ball. Roxy's a little out of it. Just woke up. So let's go, Gene.
Good morning, y'all.
Oh. They
lemon
say,
fix.
I cleaned my gun in Galveston, and I found funny that's like, just because it rhymes.
With what?
With Galveston.
Oh, gun?
They clean their gun.
Okay.
You don't understand my jokes.
Not all of them. I haven't been MK Ultra yet.
I cleaned my gun, and I said, because it rhymes with Galveston.
All right. Okay, Gene, lead us into the next discussion.
Well, the synchronicity is that I'm going to Galveston in March, Rox, and I just returned from San Francisco before you went.
Mm.
I was in San Francisco over Thanksgiving, and then the next show I heard that you were going.
Yeah.
Little.
Which part?
I was in Oakland for a few days. I stayed with Madeline, and then we went to Sequoia National Forest about 4.5 hours southeast of San Francisco. It was actually closer to L.A. It was up in the mountains, and it was beautiful, very peaceful and quiet. And we slept under baby sequoia trees. They were huge, but they were very young in the area that we rented a cabin.
And they picked up two guys.
Two loggers.
Yeah. They got logged, hot logged.
We got logged. They changed our tires.
Yeah, that's a good metaphor.
Yes. I do want to talk about some stuff, Bob, but it's awful late. And
so what?
You're not, well, it's going to require input from you. Well, maybe not, but I'd like to.
Yeah, I can do input. I can do input.
And it kind of, it's related to what you and Clinton and Roxy were talking about earlier, too. Ever since I listened to one of the class series, LaRouche's class series that explains his basic economic, his four principles.
Yeah.
I've had in the back of my mind this idea of value being human creativity. Or it's the resurrection, because LaRouche, his basic principles kind of comprise that the driving force of progress is human creativity, and that's what we want to foster and promote. You know, going to the stars, going into space isn't his premise isn't because we have to explore space. It's furthering the creativity. It's expanding and taking human creativity as far as it'll go for that period of time.
Yep.
And I loved the discussion you and Jenny had 3 weeks ago.
Yes, about William.
Yes, it was just such a great, it was a retrieval, it was a primer. I was able to observe what I know now in that summary. It was a great summary that Jenny, you know, explored. And she was commenting on, you know, what she understands now and how she can overlay it now compared to before. And, you know, I'm a younger Ayanat.
Yeah.
I'm second or third phase or, you know, whatever phase of Ayanat. And so I was observing myself. And the one thing that hit was, for me, it just kind of fell into place, is this relationship. McLuhan discovered that, McLuhan developed principles around media as an extension of nature. That McLuhan, everybody else separates nature from technology and media.
Yeah.
That they're separate entities and there's no interrelationship. There's no social science other than McLuhan that describes the interrelationship, the extension of nature through technology. And technology is human creativity. It's how humans express creation in the physical.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
So we really, no one really can explain what physical reality is, really.
Well, you know what he says? He says it's creative mentation. What are humans made of? Creative mentation.
Mentation. Well, there you go. Because I was going to, okay. So that was another summary statement for me. Technology is humans creating in the physical.
Yeah.
We don't know what physical is. But our expression of creation is the technological progress we make, and we make in LaRouche's terms anyway. So, so this is the place McLuhan cracked or discovered through Joyce, through Finnegan's Wake, and identified
and
started,
other things, other disciplines.
Yes. But McLuhan is the first or the only, possibly, to extrapolate or to expand, to correlate nature with technology and then the media.
Yeah, there may be people
since. The electronic.
But he was the first public intellectual.
And... okay, then that was another question. So are there, all right, and you're not aware of any others who wrote or talked about this idea that you didn't include in your chart, aside from those?
Yeah, Bucky Fuller was pretty good. He claims McLuhan got extensions from him. McLuhan said he didn't get it from anybody. If he got it from anybody, it was Wyndham Lewis. But Bucky Fuller kind of said it too. He might have even been the first. But he didn't take it as far as McLuhan. He only did industrial hardware. He didn't get into electric software. He didn't see that.
Okay. All right.
Because he was an old-fashioned architect.
And I don't get this kind of information from McLuhan on the McLuhan Facebook post. They don't talk about this extent. This is not discussed amongst McLuhan experts.
Tell them about it, Roxy.
What?
I said, tell them about it, Roxy. She has the same complaint as yours.
So this is the only place in the world that we're actually making that correlation and talking about it. And the crux there is human creativity. So Jenny was inspired by listening to your 2011 recording with Andrew and the other guy, that long name, what's his, it was posted. I'm pretty sure that's the one that was posted on Ion and Bob.
Love the McLuhan,
The McLunar Eclipse?
Yeah.
Bob Dobbs with Andrew Crystal and Miroslav Bits?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he was a New Yorker who came out at Christmas for the end of the centennial in 2011. He's the only guy who came out. You can see a couple of dialogues with him in December 2011 done on a bench down at Polo Beach. But he got alienated pretty quickly.
Okay.
He wasn't even going to post them because I was critiquing feminism, you know, with figure ground stuff. And he was in university, so he said, I can't have that out there. These poor guys, they can't do anything. They're all controlled by the women. And so he wouldn't post them for a few months. Then he gave up and let me post them. Ridiculous. It must be horrible.
That was in 11.
These women. Yeah, December 2011. You can look it up on the timeline.
Yeah, well, I'm just thinking with that kind of perspective and just how much that's blown up now, where, yeah, it's the end of the white man right now as far as what he can get away with
not
saying.
Not if I have anything to do with it.
Okay, so in that, in the first hour of that interview, you guys were talking about the avant-garde and how art, the role of art has changed.
Yeah.
And let's see, where's my notes on that? I have to find it. Oh, crap, where is it? You said that... it was about programming human creativity that McLuhan said in the 50s that now human creativity could be, my words, managed, that it could
right.
be programmed, and that it started with the discovery of, I think what you meant was the discovery of or the summarizing of the human creative process started with Ezra Pound and Eliot and...
Choice, the vortices, yeah.
Right. But it actually went back to Edgar Allan Poe?
Yes, he was very important. He didn't get it all, but he knew something. Even Coleridge is a factor. You read McLuhan's essays in The Interior Landscape, he spells that out. There were the romantics. It was the... urban guys in the second half of the 19th century who got deeper into it in relation to technology. And Edgar Allan Poe inspired those guys. So McLuhan thinks a lot of Poe for his avant-garde understanding.
Okay. That's the first time that I've heard that explanation of Poe. But the point was... there was a management of human creativity. There was an understanding of how to, well, what you said in the recording was how to program.
Yeah, there's so much different kinds of creativity when the whole population becomes a workforce. That's what McLuhan said, under electronic conditions. So most of the creativity is subjective, like those kids having parties for their costume decorations. They think they're being creative, but the real creativity is in the CIA, and that's
right.
not known, and that's not understood. So there's different levels of creativity, and the highest levels program the lesser types of creativity. But the whole population is a workforce.
So in a way, and I don't know what the correct word is, but in a way, human creativity has been sabotaged or suppressed or kept at some status quo level we may be seeing, that's what I said on chat, the last bastion of human creativity is the generation wealth concept.
No,
where
no,
it's
no.
Materialism.
And the deeper you get into it, and you read my Up the Earth for Gandhi, about how the Tetrad Manager allows all kinds of creativity to happen. That's where you get on a Secret Council 10 level. And so it's a rather self-effacing creativity. and that's what you get to. Everybody's allowed to be creative today, and you're going to come up against other people on your level of creativity that will disagree with you and compete with you. So you got endless competing. McLuhan said the 20th century is the most creative century ever. So this old humanist thing, people are dumb, stupid, they're missing the media effects of the whole thing.
Well, yeah, that's why it's what's been in the back of my head is this redefining value and what has value and what is valuable. It's not what is wealth. It's not money anymore. It's not currency. It's not gold.
Right.
And you had said, I mean, again, you've said over and over that hardware is diminishing. So how do you translate that in terms of LaRouche's physical economy? And in that, when I was listening to the Generation Wealth expert that Roxy was playing earlier, when we talk about this, what is it, the self, what was it? When you talk about the use of software in creativity, in human creativity, it's an entirely different ballgame than building bridges or a spaceship to go to the stars in LaRouche's context. And yet we have both of those economies going on, even if it is in some sort of virtual manner. And, you know, like I said before, we still need plumbers to, you know, hook up our toilets. We still need that
LaRouche,
physical economy.
LaRouche is a hardware creative genius, and he's useless in the software creativity that McLuhan laid out, but the software creativity is pushed to extreme so that we just got idiots making apps and nobody knows how to make machine tool anymore.
Yes.
So you bring back LaRouche's machine tool support curriculum. And you know, like to rebuild the left hemisphere. LaRouche is a left hemisphere creativity, but he's swamped in the last 30, 40 years by the right hemisphere creativity that took over. And McLuhan was the, the best guy for that. But McLuhan doesn't apply to today. So it's either Ion or LaRouche. LaRouche is talking about a huge blind spot in people. They forgot about that kind of creativity. They're trying to make designs.
Yes, we don't know how to define it as valuable, the software creativity, and I wonder even if kids of that generation, I don't hear talk about them creating physical economy. It's more about developing apps and traveling the world, and
it's all chip body. They got no chemical body. And society will fall apart if you just stay in that mode. So LaRouche reminds people of the chemical body and what should be done there. I mean, they don't teach kids what they should teach.
Right, right. And so that physical economy is still necessary in this context. And so now I've been wanting to talk about a YouTube that was on Ion and Bob. I think his name is Richard Werner, an economist.
Yeah.
Do you remember?
I didn't watch it, but I remember it being posted.
Well, he explained, he basically explained that there are two sets of books being kept by the banks. And I don't want to go into all that detail right now. It's fascinating.
McLuhan writes about that in Take Today.
Okay.
All double re-entries.
Okay, yes. And that's just absolutely fascinating. But he also talks about the different sizes of banks and how they accommodate different sizes of economies. The big banks cater and exchange and do business with the big investors.
Yeah.
And so there's big, medium, and small. And when you're talking about investing in human creativity at the individual level, that is a more local level. Banks can be tailored. The smaller banks, there's very few private banks left, but they still do exist in small economies, in small communities. where they're investing directly into the local infrastructure, that local physical economy. And that's what seems to be separated. There's different investors for the software creativity. I'm trying to get a handle on defining the value, because we have to be able to define this. You say that this human creativity is valuable, that there's more creativity going on now than there ever has been, but
yes,
nobody can understand it. Nobody can, well, we can't define it as valuable. And how do we?
Well, they can't
put it
into a book.
Define
it as a book.
Let's
see. Yeah, that's why The Wake is the last book. It's all about the creative process, and he has everybody being creative. Here comes everybody.
Right. Right. And
so McLuhan spells it out, which makes sense out of it, and that was important for, 30 years. But then you now have, this is what Roxy sees in San Francisco. You got apps and software development. It's all nice, but it just goes in entertainment. And yet there's all these ghettos in poverty on the hardware level that's not being addressed.
Yeah, it's the destruction of the physical economy in San Francisco. There's no
so the kids,
structure
the
supporting.
Kids, the millennials, they just jump into the chip body and hope they can find something that'll stick.
Right, right.
They don't have, they're all panicking. They don't have the LaRouche perspective. They wouldn't believe it.
Well,
China's kind of doing it.
That's what we're seeing that from China now, where a few short, 30 years ago, you went to college in order to develop a career in a certain field in order to produce something. And that's now changed into, it's all, the product doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what the product is, as long as you're, you can't even say you're making money anymore. You're just moving the gears and putting numbers on a spreadsheet and a computer. So,
well, McLuhan said that in the 60s, people will be paid to read the newspaper.
Right.
It'll be an old medium. So you got a lot of people reading, learning, studying stuff, but they're not paid. Nobody knows how to put that in as a creative, valuable force in society.
Yes.
So I think I saw someone saying the other day, there's millions of people thinking, writing, typing, yet none of them are getting paid, but they can't stop being creative in their forums.
And that, that goes for the mainstream media as well. CNN just keeps going, where, the information soon becomes meaningless. And that's, so that's where I'm getting at. If things do change dramatically at the global leadership level, if what we're watching is the elite or the cabal being brought down, and there are no managers that are really in charge anymore, there is that gap. We're watching a transition period of defining value of what's, because our current economy is based supposedly on defining physical economy, when physical economy isn't the major player anymore in the economy. It's the numbers.
You're telling me to turn the oven off.
4:39, that's it. 2:39. Go punch the button, Bob.
I just
clear
turned
off.
It off.
Yay.
I did it.
Yay. Whatever is being bait is, has, we did it, Bob. We did it. We didn't screw up Carolyn's thing.
Yeah, crypto, typical anarchist, libertarian anarchist is trying to fuck me over. So what was your lesson?
Okay, so there's this, I see a gap or a transition period in actually defining what is valuable.
Yeah, we don't know what value is. In the 80s, Kroger edited a book about valuation was the new mood in academia, people were arguing what are values. They had a crisis because Reagan, was he valuable? And so it was called valuation crisis. So there were a lot of discussions back in the 80s about what are values in academia.
Values in academia. Well, and I'm narrowing it more to, you know, defining value on an economic scale. On
no, we don't know.
We don't. We're not using words. We're not talking. We're not translating your social science into
right.
incorporating physical economy with this new.
Well, that's what
it's beyond software.
Generation
right?
wealth. It's about these kids not arriving at some point of value. That was their problem. It's all about these people who get, they try different forms of wealth aggravation, accumulation, cliche, and it doesn't
mm-hmm.
work.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So they need to be told, you're not going to get a definite idea about value. So when Krishnamurti says, to be truly creative or spiritually aware, you have to be incomplete. People have to learn to explore their incompleteness. And that's why McLuhan says it can be spread into exploring pain. That was the big discovery of the 20th century, probing pain.
Of the 20th century.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. Yeah, because if we can't define it as valuable, then how do we invest in it? Or, and that's what I was getting with banking, to transform banking and bring it back to investment in individuals, you have to, investors have to believe something has value. So, Silicon Valley was created, you know, in that world of big banks and big investments. And so it's all centrally located in one area, or at least is springing from that area. And that's the software world. But that doesn't translate to individuals either.
Other than titillating their ganglia.
Yes, exactly. And you said that in the 2011 recording with Andrew Crystal that... oh, crap. Give me a second here. I lost it. That there was no individual I don't know if you said creativity or art wasn't made by individuals. It was only on a collective basis now.
Yeah.
So is that part of, in the software world, it requires big banks and big investments in big areas because it's collective, that there isn't the ability to invest in individuals?
Right. That's what was good about Zappa. He didn't have an identity crisis. He wasn't a control freak. He let his musician perform. He took other people's stuff. He orchestrated it really well.
Oh, interesting.
He played down being a genius, you know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
As Irving said, he was one of the most balanced people on the planet.
And that's just using what's already been created. It's not borrowing or taking other people's stuff. It's not borrowing from other people. It's using what's already been created and turning it into something.
Yeah, with his musicians.
New and different.
Every band was determined by the musicians he picked. The type of music they did was based on his band, what their abilities were.
So he was hands-off management.
Yeah, but he also he was tactile. He also was hands-on.
Yes.
It was based on ratios. If somebody screwed up, they'd be fired really fast.
Yes. He was super sensitive with sound.
Yep.
He was a perfectionist in his art. But he allowed... Yep. Well, okay, so this takes me to the big kahuna that I've been pondering for a long time. In the world of the ascended, is management required? And Ion implies that there is no such thing, that it can't be managed.
Right.
So, Zappa was laissez-faire in allowing what came out of the creative process, the collective creative process with his musicians.
Yeah. They were constantly being creative. They'd have a 2 or 3 hour sound check in the afternoon before the concert. And it was another concert as far as Zappa was concerned. They'd discover new stuff, change their songs, invent new songs. Basically, you look at Zappa, was always creating, wherever he was.
And not controlling, just allowing whatever to come forward.
Well, I wouldn't say that. He was controlling something. They had to rehearse 8 hours a day. He only did it, he did the second half, 4 hours. He had, the Klonemeister did the first 4 hours. Led the band. And you can hear in interviews, these guys would, one guy had to transcribe it. He'd go home and transcribe it after rehearsing all day. And then he'd come back in next day, and Zappa would change it. So I could re-transcribe it. So this would go on about 4 months. I mean, those guys were really in a prison for 4 months, learning this stuff, working with them. But they created music that no one else could do.
Meticulous. He was meticulous.
Yeah.
Well, that's... that is has been my ponderings in looking at how in some ways it seems really simple for me to say if we just that this economy could change overnight if there
well,
was some
what's going to cause the change.
Yes,
you saw it in your job. The government world you were in didn't make sense after a while.
Yes. And now what I'm seeing is everybody holding on to something that doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
And how does that transition into returning to something that makes sense? And not in the way where I'm going, where I'm being nostalgic or want to go back to an earlier time. That's not what I'm talking about now. How do we
You want to go back to an earlier time?
No, this is not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is, how do we start using words to identify and redefine what's valuable based on your chart, based on how you've extended?
Well, that may be why Ion says words don't, they don't have creativity anymore. They have power.
Words have power. They don't create.
Yeah. Because of this nebulosity that's been extremely enhanced. Like, you can't say what time it is. Recession, depression, inflation. Journalists will attempt to say something.
Yeah.
But everybody knows the next day something's going to happen that'll contradict that.
Yep.
So people can't, they can't spell out with nouns. That's why Bucky Fuller said, I seem to be a verb. I seem to be a verb.
So, okay, so we may not be able, we may no longer use words to define value.
Well, we have to find out what I means. They're not the creative source. Something else is. So what's it mean that they have power? See,
well,
and
they
don't know what I mean.
Ian referred to knowing in that last in that last recording about words don't create, they have power.
Hmm.
And so they related knowing as opposed to using words.
See, Ion announced in the last minutes of 2011 that they were a hologram. And we had to take a couple of years to process that. Then they came back and we understood it and they demonstrated themselves as a hologram. So in their last statements for the public in February 2017?
Yeah.
17. They made 17. This statement about words are not creative. See, that was a new level. And now we had to think about it for 2 years. And then hopefully Ian will go into it when he goes public again.
Mm-hmm.
Are you there, Lauren? Guess he's not.
You lose him. Somebody's sleeping.
That's Roxy.
Oh. There's still a part of her that's still here.
I just
there's a part. The
well,
biggest part of you is still here, Roxy.
Yeah, you're discussing things she should be interested in. We're talking economy.
Yeah, it's late, but it's late to be doing this discussion, but I've got more.
Roxy, when you get a chance, the show will be over in a couple of minutes. But you should listen to what Gene brought up in terms
of
the economy.
And this is really kind of the beginning, Bob, because there's a few things I've collected around this topic of kind of and again, words don't create because I don't want to say reviving human creativity or that, you know, returning it from some sort of sabotage because it's like you said, humans are creative regardless of the circumstances that they're put in. That's,
yeah.
You know, that's what defines physical existence is this idea that we're gods in some sort of physical reality that we don't know what it is.
The Gutenberg arts put creativity on a pedestal. Medieval people didn't have that pedestal.
Mm-hmm. There you go. And
it was more religion. So the principalities are very weak today.
The principalities.
Yeah, that's a word in the Bible. Did you grunt there, Roxy?
Yeah. The principality. I'm like, what? The principality?
It's a good line in the Bible.
Let's just give love to each other and have a magical day.
Yeah, but you can't get agreement on what love is and how to express it.
Love is chemistry.
Principalities and powers.
One man's poison is another man's Persian tea. So
you just let it flow. You don't ask what it is. You just
we don't need your manipulative satire. We're trying to be particular here.
Just talk to the person next to you. Be happy.
In her dream sleep.
Next to you. I like
happy.
To see Roxy do that. I've never seen Roxy do that.
I'm actually a hippie.
Yeah.
I just found out that I will. Yeah, that's my
well, Yeah, she goes to San Fran, and it's all over. Now she's
She checked her mind into the local bin. One of us will find it one day in a bin in a drugstore for sale. We'll say Roxy's mind.
No, I'm going to be having fun with the cowboys.
She's going to go to the Goodwill. Yes. She's going to go to the Goodwill and get her own tent and put it under a viaduct somewhere in Oakland and set up shop.
No, she's going to be a cowboy singer.
A cowboy singer?
Yes.
Yep.
Yes, like.
What'd you do? Did you go to Texas too?
No.
Did you go to San Francisco via Iceland and Texas?
No.
Well, are there a lot of cowboys in San Francisco, Roxy?
I'm not sure.
They were the other conversation. That
I am.
Didn't get any data on.
I'll have to catch up. Was that earlier tonight?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, and I hope to return next year, so.
She's going to go on the road, take her band with her.
You can sing Willie Nelson covers?
No.
Or Hank Williams?
I played one. She liked the one I played. Second song.
Willie?
No.
No?
Some of we don't know.
Country and Western singer?
No, there are some very weird bands, like they're playing bluegrass and hip-hop and stuff like that.
Yeah. Mixing it up.
Cool.
I played one last week. Hip-hop country band.
Bluegrass. Hmm.
What time is it?
Bluegrass hip-hop?
1 minute?
It is 3 minutes before the next hour, depending on where you are, Bob.
3 minutes before the hug.
Before the what? The hug?
The big hug.
The hug.
Of all.
The diggers. The diggers became the hog farm. With wavy
feed
gravy.
You're homeless.
Yes. Humbleless.
Yes.
So, yeah, it is 5 a.m. my time, almost 2 minutes before, and it's 3 a.m. in L.A.,
1 a.m. here.
It. 1 a.m. there?
Yep.
So you're only 2 hours difference with California now?
4 months of the year.
Three. Oh, good grief. It was
November to March.
I thought it was 3 hours and then 4 hours difference, but it's 2 hours and then 3 hours difference.
Yeah.
Okay. Are you closing out?
No, I'll stay around.
Are we going to hear the music?
Yeah, it'll be on. Trust Bill.
There it is.
There it is.
Have a magical day, people.
Yes.
Peace and love.
Big hugs to everyone. Big hugs.
Yeah.